Good morning. By the way, we'll have the book signing out in the lobby afterwards. We all have black copies with us. We're selling them at a discount. Thank you all for coming this morning. And actually, I want to thank Naomi, who did most of the work in organizing this session. What I want to do this morning is, actually, I'm going to try to do several things in the short time I have. I want to sort of set the stage, so to speak, for all of the talks today. And I want to start by just sort of expressing some issues about the current state of educational assessment, and then run through some things relatively quickly about a way to think about educational assessment that draws upon research in the cognitive sciences and the learning sciences, and some of its implications, and then also, I guess, some final thoughts and some things that I think learning scientists need to take seriously about this whole enterprise. So let me just start off with, you heard from Roy the other night about some of the policy issues that surround the kind of research we do. Well, the same can be said about a set of policy issues that we should be really concerned about in the area of educational assessment. Those of you who sort of know the field of educational assessment know that over the last several years, several points have been raised about problems and issues in current educational assessment. One is this whole idea of misalignment of high-stakes accountability tests and local curriculum and instructional practices. The whole idea that there's a narrowing of instruction by teaching to tests that have extremely restricted performance outcomes. And a problem that educators oftentimes express, which is that assessments that are available frequently fail to provide instructionally relevant or useful information, and what information they do provide is not done in a very timely fashion. And then there's another part of the dilemma here, which is that classroom assessments, the kinds of assessments that teachers use, which have the potential to significantly enhance instruction and learning, typically are not being used to their fullest capability. And despite all these concerns about educational assessment and high-stakes testing, we have last year this lovely little piece that was published called No Child Left Behind. And for those of you who don't follow the legislation, let me tell you about a few of the salient features of the No Child Left Behind legislation. It mandates annual assessments of all students in math and science in grades 3 through 8, and then once in grades 9 through 12. And this mandated assessment in math and science is to begin no later than the 2005-2006 academic year. It also means that there are going to be annual assessments of students in science, no less than once in each of those three different grade spans, and that begins in the year 2007-2008. So some of us now call No Child Left Behind, No Child Left Untested, which is really what we have. Now the other part of the legislation that is extremely problematic is the adequate yearly progress component of this, which mandates that within 12 years, 100% of all students in every state will have reached the proficient level of academic achievement by whatever definition proficient has yet to be determined. And along the way, you have to establish intermediate goals for improvement. Projections of this legislation when you enact it are that within 3 to 4 years, regardless of where states set their proficiency level, even at the lowest level, within 3 to 4 years, between 60% and 80% of all schools in America will have been designated as failing. So that is the context in which we do our work, and that's what's impacting schools. So what I'd like to move to instead is a sort of a way to think about the way we should be approaching educational assessment. This is another report that was published last year. It has gotten far less play than No Child Left Behind for these reasons. And it's a report of a National Research Council committee that I co-chaired with Bob Blazer, and it included 18 individuals, including several learning scientists. And the whole thesis of this committee and the report was that obviously, there's a set of necessities for rethinking educational assessment, but there's also a set of opportunities that we want to capitalize on. and it includes advances in the cognitive sciences and the fact that this illuminates aspects of learning and understanding that really should be the targets of assessment. And there are also a parallel set of advancements in measurement and technology that significantly expand our capability in terms of being able to collect and interpret and make sense of much more complex forms of data and evidence. And the report argues that the merger of these three provides an opportunity for promoting a new science and practice of educational assessment. And what I want to do is sort of give you a flavor of at least one of the major points of the report. And it's the whole idea of a way to think about assessment as fundamentally a process of reasoning from evidence. And we talk about this in terms of the assessment triangle. And there are three components of it that are connected. First is the cognition vertex, some model or representation of how students represent knowledge and develop confidence in the domain. The second is the set of observations or tasks that are linked to that cognitive model in some way that allow one to observe students' performance. And the third is the interpretation piece, a method for making sense of the data, how to map the observations back to the underlying model. And the whole idea is that these three things need to be coordinated in a serious way. And in fact, we argue that much of what we have in current educational assessment is rooted in very simplistic, outdated theories of cognition and learning and very limited sets of observations. And this issue of synchronizing the three, we can sort of point out two problems that we face. This is the one that's familiar to most cognitive scientists when we critique educational assessment. And it's the fact that no matter how sophisticated your statistical techniques or models are, if you're using them with extremely restricted models of learning and extremely restricted cognitive tasks, that all you can produce is very limited inferences about the nature of student competence. And that's what we always argue about current standardized tests. But there's a problem for the kinds of work we do in terms of our learning science research in classrooms, which is that you can have assessments that are based on very complex and detailed models of how students learn, but they also will not yield all the information that you would want, particularly if you don't have the statistical interpretive tools to make sense of the data, or the data themselves are not really sufficient to the task or to the model. So, two themes that we try to hit on in the report and carry through is what's constant in assessment and what's variable. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about assessments to support learning in the classroom, assessments for summative purposes, or assessments for program evaluation. What's constant are the principles that underlie the activity of engaging in assessment. And that includes all three elements of that assessment triangle and how they work together or don't work together in many cases. What's variable is the issue of purpose and context of assessment use. And this is something that is extremely confusing in the literature. Most people believe that a test is a test is a test. And then you can use a test for multiple purposes. And in fact, you can demonstrate that tests need to be constructed to fit the purpose for which they're intended. If you're using a test to support formative assessment in the classroom, it may not look the same as a test that's being used for high-stakes accountability purposes. And the idea that we can use one test, such as the kinds of tests that are going to be developed under No Child Left Behind, to support all the different purposes that we have in mind is a fallacy. So what you have to do is to recognize that the different situations require different tailoring of how you build the assessment structure. Let me just quickly mention then, using that assessment triangle framework, we argue that there's really two scientific foundations of assessment. The advances in the sciences of thinking and learning are really what undergirds this cognition vertex. It informs us about the kinds of observations that are sensible to make for particular domains of instruction and learning. The part that most learning scientists don't know much about is the contributions that are made by measuring statistical modeling, which is the interpretation vertex, which informs us about how to make sense of the observations we've made. in our report, we sort of review many of the advances in the sciences of thinking and learning and what they imply for assessment. These are the things that come out of how people learn, the things that are common knowledge quotes from here about knowledge organization, characteristics of expertise, situated knowledge, etc. I'm not going to try to do that in this context. But a couple of summary points that come out of the review of what cognitive science, learning sciences offers is that the knowledge that we have now implies that assessment practices clearly have to move beyond discrete bits and pieces of knowledge to get at the kinds of more complex learning that this whole conference is about. And we actually have instructional programs and assessment practices that are based on that kind of theory for certain areas of the curriculum. What we're lacking, however, is in many cases the translation of this research into findings that can be practically used by teachers and others, and the fact that we don't have models for all areas of the curriculum. In the area of measurement, one of the issues is that, in fact, in the committee, when we started this process, we all believed that all of the ills in educational assessment were because of the psychometrician. There were 18 people on the committee, and there were 3 psychometricians among the 18. We immediately ganged up on them and said, "You're the bane of the earth." They were a resolute group, and they convinced us that we were wrong in that interpretation. That in fact, one of the problems was that while we had rich cognitive models, we also had over time developed much richer measurement models. But those measurement models had not been connected up very well to cognitive models. And so we review various kinds of models that allow us to address the kinds of issues that cognitive scientists believe ought to be addressed in assessment. And that includes being able to assess in terms of both continua and discrete classes, being able to assess on multiple attributes of proficiency, and being able to look at and quantify status as well as change. I mean, one of the things that concerns us is the whole idea of growth or change. And in fact, many assessment models or statistical models focus more on status. So it's possible to actually describe a rich progression of models and methods of increasing complexity. It turns out that the bottom line is that these methods are available, but they haven't been used very extensively, nor have we done the work to try to connect the model to connect the statistical model to the kinds of cognitive models and descriptions of competence. So, let's see, what do I have left, Naomi? 1 minute? 2, maybe? I'm going to just sort of mention some of the implications for assessment design. There's really 3 issues that need to be considered in translating the so-called scientific foundation into engineering design reality. Building assessments, designing assessments, is science and art. It's an engineering design process. And there's a set of issues that need to be considered, including what are the principles that guide the process of assessment design using the ideas of the assessment triangle. Another set of issues that relate to the multiple uses of assessment, this whole idea of connecting design to the context in which they're going to be used. And the third one is feasibility. And here's a case where technology offers tremendous opportunities to sort of implement much more effective assessment design. And if I had more time, I would go into some of the implications of that. But I don't, so I'll just sort of skip that and finish with just a couple of final thoughts. I argue that the Know What Students Know report offers a very different vision for educational assessment than the vision that's out there that led to No Child Left Behind. It's a vision that puts assessment as an integral part of learning. And there is a tremendous amount of scientific knowledge that we have right now that can yield many enhancements in assessment design and use. But there's clearly a lot more research that has to be done in the learning sciences, and that has to be coupled with changes in the policy and practice context to really move things forward. And my sort of exhortation to learning scientists folks is don't eschew issues of assessment, but actually embrace them as critical to your enterprise, and either we become an active part of the game in terms of defining what's appropriate and effective educational assessment. Well, the kinds of learning that matter to us are going to be shoved out of the educational arena because of the onslaught of these kinds of accountability level tests. And so I leave you with this little friend here, it's true, we're going to have a lot more testing in America. The question is, will they help children learn, and what can we do instead to help sort of move the whole field of assessment forward so that we can assess the kinds of complex learning that matter to us? Thanks.